I'm Jeff Lehman. I'm an art historian by training, but also to a large extent interdisciplinary in my interest by training, in the sense that my education began with a humanities major at Yale, which was interdisciplinary, not in exactly the way Eckles is, but in a related way. So I didn't start out focused on art history, but definitely on humanities in a broader context. And then I just, after a little while, decided to go into art history and did graduate work at Columbia University. And that's, I guess, what turned me into an art historian, although I would say I've retained maybe a sense of interest in, I would say, art more than art history, but the visual arts and especially painting in relation not only to art historical problems, but to philosophical, theoretical concerns, and especially, I would say, to put it in plain terms, art in relation to direct experience. A lot of my work is focused on things like understanding the encounter with art and the viewer response to art and what we learn, understand, feel in relation to the experiences of art, both individually and, of course, in dialogue with each other. So that has very much to do with the way I think about teaching art as well. My research, which was to say the focus of my dissertation and which I continue to work on to a large extent, is focused on Renaissance painting, and in particular, particular landscape painting in relation to perspective, which is the sort of core theoretical sort of mode of painting that develops in the Renaissance, the sort of way that painting is understood. And I'm very interested in sort of the development of landscape as a genre, or maybe more specifically particular landscape paintings, and how, again, how we experience them, how we think about them in relation to their mode of address to the viewer. And perspective is essentially kind of mathematical, theoretical paradigm for thinking about the viewer picture relationship. So that's really the core of my, that was what I worked on my dissertation, and it's very much the stuff that I'm working on now, in addition to my teaching at ECLA. So maybe in many ways continuing, not so much with landscape painting per se, but with this problem of what you could say, broadly speaking, is the sort of phenomenological dimension of art and the experience of art and how we interface with it. So, for instance, I've been recently working on something on Shakespeare as a reader of painting in the Renaissance, because I think it's sort of interesting that Shakespeare picks up on, again, what I'm calling the phenomenological character of painting, which is that sort of the way it affects a viewer, even in a bodily sense, like a sense of vertigo that comes with looking into a landscape painting. And Shakespeare, in some of his later plays, seems very interested in this issue, sort of in poetry, describing painting in a way that addresses this experiential character. So that's still kind of working on Renaissance landscape painting, but maybe taking it in a direction which I think is natural to me, and that it involves a sort of interdisciplinary concern with a particular problem, in this case poetry and painting and how they relate to each other. My main concern with teaching, and this would be true even with text, because I've taught in the core classes at ECLA, I've taught, you know, Plato's Republic, for instance. My main concern is for them to say, honestly confront their own direct response to the work, whether that be a close reading of a passage or a painting, when I'm teaching painting or work of architecture. So I think what the way I approach it is not necessarily that I give them a framework ahead of time, but I try to get students to talk about what they actually, you know, to sort of trust their intuitions and talk about what they see or what they can, what emerges from looking at a passage of text, and then maybe respond in a way that I feel might guide it towards something meaningful, Or if I see something, an issue, a meaningful issue that this is sort of embedded in what the student sees, maybe draw it out. Maybe I think this person is interested in such and such, and that's why she or he pointed out that figure in the painting or that aspect of the composition. So I think of it more that way, because it has to do with, again, how I think, how I myself address works of art. It's always maybe to some extent an interplay between some kind of set of theoretical problems that you're interested in that you bring to the work, and an openness to the work in which the work can always surprise you. Because you don't, a work of art, and maybe I mean that in the broadest sense, a text as well, any sort of object, cultural object that is of a high sufficient, say, quality, is always richer than anything we can impose on it. I mean, I firmly believe that. So no matter how many times I've looked at a painting or how many times I've read a text, I think I have a pretty good idea what this thing is about, but it will surprise me. And when I talk to students about it, they will notice things that I would never have seen. So I guess that's what I try to encourage them to do, to sort of develop ways of thinking, maybe something you could call method about art over time, but in a dialogue with their own immediate intuitive responses. And to try to get past maybe superficial observations too, like what you can really see, or, you know, think or feel about a work. What's specific about this place, it's not true of any other educational institution that I've known. Even small liberal arts colleges don't usually have the situation where you have seminars of 10 or fewer people, or these core classes that are sustained over, you know, these double core classes that are seminar driven. Now, those, of course, have lectures as well. I'm actually now teaching a double core class where there's not much lecturing going on, so it's like 3-hour seminars twice a week. It's very intense, and that's, I feel like that's a great opportunity to be able to do that. It's a combination of the fact that the faculty here, and I think the students that choose to come here, are pretty committed to this idea, and that we have the physical infrastructure to do it. So that's pretty unique, I think, and it's something I don't take for granted. If education is just primarily about job training, that's preparing you to know how to secure your own financial success in the future. But is that teaching people how to negotiate problems like living in a diverse community or whatever? It might make sense if you went to a university for 4 years and that what they were teaching you is how to do a particular kind of job very well, that you'd be annoyed that someone else got that job, and that might be your focus in thinking about the problem of immigration. But what if you had other resources to draw from besides this very pragmatic, instrumental model of education? Education is to secure your own financial future. That's why liberal arts is so essential. I mean, and this might sound obvious, but I think this is something religion does also, but maybe less and less in the world today, especially in places where society is very secular. Or the reverse, where you have kind of fundamentalist versions of religion. It's not to imply that the university is the only place where you can address big questions that concern all, you know, all human beings, but it's certainly one of the places you can do that. So, I mean, I really do think, I mean, I also personally think things like understanding paintings is valuable in itself. But even if you leave aside the specific things like understanding philosophical problems or paintings or whatever, just the mode of inquiry where you address problems that are not only of immediate economic or practical concern, but of larger concern, I feel like is essential for human beings somehow. And I feel like this is actually really threatened in the direction that higher education is going in the 21st century, and something we should think about very, very carefully. Three or four times a year, I go to northern France to look at when I say to look at Gothic architecture, but what I really mean is to look at Chartres Cathedral, Amiens Cathedral. I mean, there's particular buildings that I make sure to go back and visit once a year or so. And in Italy, I'm in Rome two or three times a year. I'm in Florence two or three times a year, and some of it is visiting, like I mentioned with Chartres Cathedral, places that I know very well that I have a kind of long-term relationship with. And some of it is just, like, I feel like a big part of the work in my field is experiencing new paintings, new buildings that I haven't looked at. So there's always something, either it's motivated by an exhibition that's going on, or it's just that what, if it's a city like Rome, there's always one more church that I've never been to. There always, because Rome is infinite. So that's just a part of my work. I mean, it's also a pleasure. I like traveling, and I have friends in Italy, so there's people I can visit, but just going to look at art objects is, it's a very, very key part of this. And it's, I'm still thinking about how to strike that balance, because I get a lot of pleasure, and I learn a lot from seeing works that I know very well again, because there's always something new. But there's also really something great about being confronted with something you haven't even thought about. Half the time it's stuff that I'm not prepared for. I just went to Pisa, mostly to visit a friend, and went back to the cathedral in Pisa, which I hadn't been to in years, and there's nothing that I'm working on research-wise that I needed to see there, but I just ran into this 12th century, amazing 12th century sculpture by this sculptor I'd never heard of, and this mosaic decoration that's clearly Islamic going on, the 12th and 13th century in Pisa. There's some kind of dialogue between a Gothic and an Islamic ornament. I mean, it was all there in the cathedral museum, and I wouldn't have thought to go look for that. So that's an important part of travel for me, too. I mean, not just about art, that's true travel in general, but for my work, certainly, going to places where I'm going to just find stuff I would never think to look for in a book. I mean, it's just, will jump out at you. The art in Berlin, if you think of it in a decontextualized way, is amazing. What I mean by that is, you have museums with art objects removed from their original context, collections of art objects, which are really exceptional. To be able to go to the Gemälde Gallery and see all of this Renaissance works in one place, it's really an exceptional collection. The Pergamon altar may be removed from its original site, but it's a major work of Greek art, which we have right here. I mean, so this stuff is great. I'm actually very interested in contemporary art, so the contemporary art scene for me is a big bonus. It's not so much what I work on, but it is in a way, because they're not so separate as one might think. I learn a lot about Renaissance art by looking at contemporary art, because contemporary art reflects on the Western tradition, but also there's certain issues which are trans-historical, how we experience art, how we relate to painting, sculpture, multimedia installation. I mean, the Renaissance is all about multimedia installation in a lot of ways. I mean, paintings are embedded in architecture with sculpture. So I get some of that contextualized experience in the contemporary art scene here, which is really great. So it's a very good place to be for art.